The following program comes to you as part of the Africa Health Network, a service of the Voice of America to our audience throughout the African continent.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Lina Mudu, and welcome to Health Chat. A Liberian woman has died today of Ebola in a hospital in Monrovia shortly after being admitted. A senior medical official says she has become the sixth confirmed case of the virus since it resurfaced last month. The victim was from Montserrado County, which contains Monrovia. It's thought to belong to the other five cases from neighboring Margibi County, where the disease reappeared. Her detection raised fears that the infection may be spreading in a new area of the country. Liberia was declared Ebola-free on May 9th, but reported a new case nearly 2 months later. For more perspective on what is happening in Liberia and the Ebola crisis in general, we are joined via phone from Paris, France, by Carissa Guild. Carissa Guild is a registered nurse and medical team leader with Médecins Sans Frontières, MSF, or Doctors Without Borders. Ms. Guild, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you with us. Let me remind our listeners that if you would like to join the conversation, you can call 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. You can also email us at healthchat@voanews.com or post your comments on facebook.com/voahealthchat. And we will discuss the latest on Ebola in a moment. But first, this past week, the U.N. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has convened an international Ebola recovery conference at UN headquarters in New York. The conference, co-organized by the three Ebola-affected countries of Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. Jackson Vunganyi was in New York to cover the event that raised over $5 billion to support in the Ebola recovery efforts.
The UN spokesman, Stéphane Dujarric, says the Ebola conference is intended to seek help from the international community in the recovery efforts of the three affected countries, building on the initial momentum of the international community in response to the Ebola crisis.
The Secretary General, since the start, has really been mobilizing the international community, mobilizing the United Nations system to work on Ebola. As we've made progress throughout the three countries, it's important that we don't forget there is a whole nother chapter to go on. There's another chapter through which we have to accompany Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone through rebuilding better, and it's important that the international community show solidarity with the people of West Africa.
The finance ministers from the three affected countries presented their recovery plans. They are seeking up to $3.2 billion in support to rebuild their health systems and sustain their recovery from the outbreak. Dr. David Nabarro, the UN Special Envoy on Ebola, says the recovery will have to start from the community level.
We've seen, for example, that health services have quite broken down in many parts because so many health workers have been ill, and also because of anxieties among the public that if they go to a health center, they might get ill with the disease. Education services have also been affected. And then looking in perhaps on the economic dimensions, there's been a cutback in the business investment and in commerce in all the affected countries. So this conference is about the needs of the countries to recover. The countries themselves to recover means the recovery of the people at the community level, the recovery of local government in the counties and the districts and the prefectures, and the recovery of whole nations so that government gets working again, there are flights back into the countries, trading restarts, and that manufacturing and mining and other key industries on which they depend can get back into place.
Nabarro says the effects of Ebola on the three countries will leave a lasting mark and will be felt longer after it has been eliminated. The theme of the conference is Get to Zero, Stay at Zero, and Rebuild. Nabarro says the international financial support will help the countries to implement their national and regional recovery strategies over a 24-month period. It comes amidst reports of two new cases of Ebola in Liberia, a country that had been declared Ebola-free. For Voice of America, I'm Jackson Vunganyi at the UN headquarters in New York.
And that was Jackson Vunganyi reporting for us from New York. Now, Carissa Gale, again, thank you so much for joining us. First off, let me have your reaction to this report, really the conference that was taking place last week about the effort to really step up what is being done on the Ebola front. $5 billion were raised, more than what was initially requested by the three countries. Now, for an organization like MSF that is working on the ground tirelessly to make sure that this epidemic really is contained, what does this mean? What does these funds that were raised mean? And what does it mean also that they went over expectation?
I guess I don't know how they'll use the money. So it's great that there's a lot of money that's now available. And it's great that people are still supporting Ebola, as I think everyone is getting quite tired to hear about it. They spoke a lot in the recording you just played about recovery, and I think recovery is a very important part in the ending of this epidemic or post-epidemic, but I also think that we need to do this but not lose sight over the fact that the Ebola outbreak is not over and we're still missing cases, and the surveillance in the field also needs to be strengthened. Yes, recovery is very important now and after the epidemic, but we can't lose sight of the fact that we are still in the midst of an epidemic in all three countries.
And you're making a very good point, because Liberia, that was declared Ebola free back in May, has seen a resurgence of new cases. And Guinea and Sierra Leone have still been struggling with the outbreak. So at this point, you just returned from Liberia. What can you tell us in terms of what is happening on the ground?
I mean, in Liberia, the emergency coordination for Ebola came back together quite strongly, which was very nice to see. When I was there, it seemed like the contact tracing was very good. There was before the one of today, the last two people who were found were contacts of the first gentleman who died, and they were actually taken out of the community before they had contacts, which was very nice to see at a certain point, to see an Ebola response work correctly. It's a bit worrying today to see that this surveillance is not as good as we thought it was, because of the case of today where it was a contact that had been missed and died in a hospital.
Okay. And so at this point, there are six reported cases that have been mentioned. But to what extent do you think that there is more to investigate? When we talk about contact tracing, you said that Liberia has been doing a good job at this, but what can you tell us in terms of how far does this contact tracing, how far should it go?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. This is, we thought it was quite well. They missed a contact. We don't know why they missed a contact. It could be just that the contact didn't declare themselves a contact, as some people do, or that we just missed investigation. So we have to keep looking into it. We also don't know the source of this latest outbreak in Liberia. They did sequencing of the virus and know that it's not a virus that's coming from Sierra Leone or from Guinea. Yet we haven't detected yet the actual source of where the first case came up. So even investigating this, investigating every patient as much as we can so that we know who to follow, I think is very important.
Yes, and that was my next question, the source of this new outbreak, because up until now, there are no clear answers as to where it's coming from.
Yeah, this is true, but this is not necessarily unusual in this outbreak. For example, last week, or the week ending in July 8th, where we have the full week data, there were 30 new cases in the three countries, five of which their sources are unidentified, so they're not linked to any transmission chain, which means that we just don't know how they arose, or that means that we don't know all of the transmission chains, I think, and that there is transmission that's happening in these countries that we don't know about.
Okay, tell us about your work when you went to Liberia. This is not your first time, obviously, that you've been working with this specific crisis. What have you been doing on the ground?
In Liberia, MSF right now, we have an inpatient unit for pediatric non-Ebola cases. we're running a hospital in this recovery phase for kids who don't have Ebola but still need care. And we're getting quite involved in the Ebola response and helping to support the Ministry of Health to not take anything over, but to really support their surveillance and to support them as far as treatment if they need it. So very available to them. We have in the other countries in Sierra Leone and Liberia, we're running surveillance and also Ebola treatment centers.
Now, when we talk about surveillance, what does it entail, really, to whether we are trying to prevent new cases from happening or controlling what is already happening?
I guess there's two aspects. The one is to prevent cases. And this is happening, the surveillance system of detecting a case. So what happened with the man 2 weeks ago or so, his case was detected because they're doing testing of saliva of people who die. And so his case was detected, I think, quite quickly with a positive swab saying that he was Ebola positive. Mm. After, for controlling the outbreak, contact tracing is one of the biggest things. And so essentially one person has Ebola. We know Ebola is transmitted through exchange of body fluids. So every person that sick person was in touch with when he was sick and was having symptoms, we talk to them and we see how they're feeling with the idea that every day there's a health staff that goes to their house and sees them and takes their temperature. And as soon as that person starts having symptoms, they're brought into a treatment center to give them treatment, to test them, and also to protect their family. Because the other thing we know about Ebola is that when you're asymptomatic, you generally can't transmit the disease. So we wait until they're symptomatic and then bring them in, taking them out of the community, protecting their family, and then being able to offer them treatment and supportive care as early as possible.
Okay, and for those who do not understand what asymptomatic means, it means not presenting any symptoms, right?
Yes, not presenting with any symptoms.
Okay. And now let's talk about some of the issues that you have been dealing with on the ground, because there have been so much going on around this crisis. This is the biggest of its time, and I know early on from the early onset, MSF was the first one to say this is very serious. Even when WHO did not declare it to be, an epidemic to the extent in which it became, MSF was raising the alarm. So at this point, what can you tell us in terms of where we are and where we need to go next?
I mean, it's definitely very much a lot better than last year at this time, but it still doesn't mean that it's over. And I think that a lot of people in different actors and governments and healthcare workers, everyone is getting quite tired. So I think now it's better, but it's still going on. So what we need to do is have zero cases. Mm-hmm. And this happens through surveillance. This happens through contact tracing. This happens to early isolation and treatment centers. I mean, also there are many studies going on now, which is quite good. A lot of actors are stepping up, and there are studies for different sorts of treatment that may be effective and for vaccines which may be effective, which are still in trial. Mm-hmm. I think perhaps some of these are promising, but these sort of things really need to get pushed through at a certain point if they're working, so that we can make them accessible to a larger part of the population.
Okay. And we are going to take a short break, Ms. Carissa Guild, and we'll come back and continue our discussion. So we'll take a short break again, as I mentioned, and don't go away. Stay with us for more on the latest on Ebola.
Thanks a lot.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late, tonight's topic on Health Chat is Ebola. We're looking at the latest development on Ebola and also getting a sense of the big on the big picture. And our guest is Carissa Guild. She's a nurse with Doctors Without Borders and has been working very closely with people on the ground on this crisis. And a reminder that you can join our conversation by calling 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1, and you can reverse the charges through your international operator. And also email us your question at healthchat@voanews.com. Now, we have a question by Paul. Paul in Kenya is asking a question about the survivors. What are the recommendations for Ebola survivors to stay healthy and prevent themselves from getting infected again? Are there some specific recommendations?
So we actually, MSF, one of the other things we're doing in Liberia and in the other countries, we're running clinics for people who have been cured of Ebola, because a number of people are seeing repercussions based on their catching Ebola and their families. So what we're usually seeing in these clinics are mainly three types of things. We're seeing joint and sort of rheumatological pain, joint muscle aches, that's not really very specific. We're seeing eye ophthalmology patients, so people who are having eye problems. And then we're also seeing patients coming, I think about 30%, who are having some sort of psychological problem or PTSD. This usually comes a few months after they've been out of a treatment center. But it seems quite normal at a certain point if you live through Ebola. Most people who have lived through Ebola, they have seen plenty of other families or of their family or friends who have also contracted the disease, and I'm sure that they also have plenty of people that they've lost. So these are the three main types of things that we're seeing in these clinics. And we offer services, if they can come in as they like, if they're having any pain or if they need to speak with a psychiatrist. We refer them to ophthalmologists if they're having eye problems. And these are the basic things that we're doing for people who have been cured of Ebola for the moment.
So for these post-Ebola syndrome that you've described, mm-hmm. what do we know in terms of how to address them? Or what do we really know about them? It seems like it's something new, or at least something that seems to be surprising. Even some health experts, what do we know about this?
Yeah, I think that we're learning quite a lot at the moment about people who have been cured from Ebola. We've never seen so many cured patients in an Ebola outbreak mm-hmm. ever. I think the biggest outbreak before this one had 450 people. Mm-hmm. And assuming that the mortality is quite high, that's not really very many people who have been cured. So I think that we're learning more and more every day about the side effects of Ebola, the repercussions that happen because of Ebola. Mm-hmm. I don't think that there's anyone in the world right now who's an expert on this post being cured.
Yes, indeed. And we saw during the outbreak when it was really at its significant moment, we saw that many health workers, at least several, got infected. What are we seeing now in terms of health workers and how they are handling, how they are being affected by this? Is there a decrease in the number of infections? Because we don't hear much about health workers being infected. So what has changed? What is happening now?
So I think that there's been almost 900 health workers who have become infected with the disease, you're right, with over 500 people who have died. Now it's still going on. Last week there was still one healthcare worker who was infected in Sierra Leone. As far as recent trip to Liberia, healthcare workers, there are new standards being put into place in hospitals and health centers for personal protective equipment. when dealing with just regular patients and really working on Ebola screening and triage before letting the patient come into the health center or the hospital. Mm-hmm. So these are all things that have been put in place in Monrovia, at least from as far as I can see, which includes basically face protection and gloves and assuring hand washing points and chlorine or soap and water, which maybe wasn't always the case before. So these are the things that are put in place for healthcare workers now, which should be protecting them. That said, I guess we will see. There was recently a case that has passed away in a hospital in Monrovia. So this means that the triage, the screening was maybe not quite up to standards, and this person came in. It's also quite difficult to screen and to say for sure there's a patient presenting with Ebola when Ebola presents with symptoms which can mimic many other things that people can present to the hospital with. So this might, as far as surveillance, it might be a good wake-up call that these standards in other healthcare facilities need to be put back into place a bit stronger.
Okay, now we have a question from Aisha in Sierra Leone. She's asking, what is the status of the Ebola outbreak in Sierra Leone and Guinea?
So in Sierra Leone and Guinea, last week there were 27 cases. There were 18 cases in Guinea and 9 cases in Sierra Leone. It seems like a small number, and the numbers are staying quite stable. The one thing is that the hot spots or where the cases are coming from seem to be moving a bit. So it's not just that people are in one town, that there's always 9 people in Sierra Leone in the same town, and that there'll be 9 people next week in the same town. So it means that the hotspot is moving a bit every week. And also, as I said before, including the case from Liberia 2 weeks ago, there were 5 cases that we don't know their origins. We don't know what chain of transmission they came from, which is still worrying, and it requires more investigation. It means that we don't necessarily have a handle on everything in any of the countries. That said, small amount of cases is much better than last year, and governments are coming together and people are coming together. One thing that has been working quite well in different countries that we've seen since the beginning of this outbreak is when there's a lot of community engagement and communities taking initiative to understand Ebola and to understand what Ebola is and how to prevent it.
And a very good point on community engagement, because we've seen in the case of Liberia that the country has credited very much the role that communities have played in containing this epidemic, and also the other two countries as well. So then today, when we look at resources, we mentioned earlier in the program that $5 billion were raised last week in New York. But when we look at resources today, what do you think? What can you tell us? What is your assessment in terms of what is needed? Is there enough resources, or where should there be more resources invested to really finalize this fight against Ebola, if it at all possible?
I mean, to be honest, it's a little bit difficult to understand all of the money being put into Ebola and where it's all going and in what sort of sectors all of these things are going. So I'm probably not the best person to ask about that. Mm-hmm. It seems like there should be, with all of the investment put into the three countries, enough resources so long as they're allocated to the right direction and to the right part.
Yes.
One thing that I still think is for things like vaccination and for these medication trials and for things that could help actual taking care of patients or preventing the disease, having resources in this field to push it along faster, if there's anything that's promising, would be very useful. But I don't know if they need more resources or not.
It's not just
something that's very important, I think, at this point.
Yes, and I know that one of the things that we heard in the beginning of the outbreak, and even in the middle of it, was that some healthcare workers were complaining that they didn't have the proper equipment to handle this situation. So perhaps this has improved with time. Hopefully, it has improved with time. I don't know. Did you have a comment on that?
I mean, from what I've seen, I definitely didn't go to every healthcare facility in Liberia when I was there.
Yeah.
But it seems that the health centers They are doing pretty good. I'm sure that there is ruptures and there's things that are missing, but they are doing more or less pretty good with always having gloves and always having face protection mm-hmm. in their centers. But this is just in the few that I saw in Monrovia, and I don't know really in Guinea or Sierra Leone how this aspect is playing out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, let's talk about the way forward. What do you see as the emphasis, where things need to be emphasized, or what are MSF plans in terms of moving forward in this crisis?
I mean, MSF is following it, and we will still be present, and we will still be treating patients, and we will still be trying to help with surveillance and working with ministries of health. So I don't think that MSF is going anywhere. Mm-hmm. I think the answer is really the same thing that we've known since the beginning, which is this identifying cases quickly, identifying where they're coming from, investigating where they're coming from, and then isolating them from their community and giving them treatment quickly. I mean, it's very simple. It seemed to be working quite well in the mini outbreak in Liberia, given the fact that there was a contact that was missed before knowing this. Having the idea that you all have contacts and you catch the contacts before they have other contacts, before they can actually infect anyone else. Mm-hmm. And this is how you stop Ebola epidemic. It hasn't changed since 20 years. It's the same thing. And now that there are so few cases, if we can really emphasize on this and we can really investigate cases and have communities involved with us, because they're the ones who are going to tell us if their brother is sick, and they're the ones who are going to teach their brother about Ebola. And so to really work with communities and strengthen the surveillance system so people report people who have died and they don't know why. So people bring their family members to hospitals when they're worried that they're sick. This sort of thing, I mean, is the way to strengthen the surveillance is by working with the people who are in the community.
Okay. And I want to touch on something before I let you go. It's the issue with children that are orphans and also survivors. How has MSF addressed this with children that are orphans with Ebola? We've seen this disease ripping families apart, taking away villages, you know, communities. Mm-hmm. So what happened with these children? Has MSF done something specifically for them?
For the post-Ebola, after the person has been after, not really. For MSF, when a family member is in a treatment center, for a while we were starting small nurseries so that the children can wait in a nursery next to the treatment center and we could provide them care and hope that they're not strong enough contact so that they'll get sick. And then after they're through 21 days or when their family members die, then giving them back to their family. MSF is not too active in this problem. I'm sure there's plenty of orphans and plenty of grandparents taking care of children and plenty mm-hmm. of new family structures. And to be honest, I don't know who is looking into this issue.
Sure. And we will definitely.
A good point to raise.
Yeah, we will definitely look into it. But still speaking about children, how much have you seen in terms of infections among children? We've seen a lot of adults being infected, but you working on the ground, mm-hmm. how much has Ebola infected children?
And there have been a fair number of kids who have gotten sick. Usually it happens when a parent gets sick. So usually a child who has a healthy parent doesn't have much of a risk to catch Ebola because they're always in their family unit and they're not really out in the world so much. Mm-hmm. When a mother gets sick and is breastfeeding a child, or when a mother gets sick and is taking care of her child, it's quite easy for them to get infected. So there have been a number of them. I don't know the statistics or the percentage, but there have been quite a few more than we've ever seen in any other outbreak.
Okay. And before we let you go, any plan on returning back soon to Liberia or any other country?
I'm sure I will. I just got back on Sunday, and I'm sure in the next month or two I'll go back.
All right. Well, take a break, some well-deserved rest, and then thank you so much for joining us today, Ms. Carissa Guild.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks a lot for having me.
Okay, great. And that's all our time, our show for today. That's all we have for our show today. Our guest was Kerry Sagild, registered nurse and medical team leader with Doctors Without Borders, MSF. We thank her for joining us from Paris. For more on today's subject and the latest on Ebola, log on to our website at voanews.com/health. And thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliates stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. Join us on Facebook and let's keep the conversation going. Just look for VOA Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu in Washington, with producer Jackson Vanganyi. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.